During this episode, there will be a conversation about past alcohol and drug addiction. This may be hard for people to listen to.
The views you are about to hear are the personal views of Kira Lawrence and her guests. They are not necessarily views that are shared by the organisations to which Kira is associated.
You're listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
So, hi everybody, welcome to the next episode of Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod. I've got an amazing chat guest, and it is the one and only amazing superstar rock star, Mr. Adam Clayton from U2. So, welcome, Adam.
That is quite an intro. Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Lovely to see you again. And hopefully we can cover some ground in the next half an hour or so.
My first question is, you play bass guitar in U2. So first of all, I would like to know, how do you A, play a bass guitar, and B, I believe that you have created an amp with Fender. So I'd like to know all about bass guitars, please, and about your amp with Fender. So over to you.
Okay. Well, I was drawn to the bass guitar before I even really knew what it was or how it worked or what it did. It just sounded like a more interesting thing than guitar because it had bass in front of it. And I also realized it only had four strings. So in a very amateur way, I thought, well, four strings are probably easier to play than six, but it's not necessarily true. The bass guitar is a bit more like a cello. So if you think in terms of orchestration, it provides this low end carpet which all the other notes kind of sit on. It has in contemporary music, it has a huge responsibility to creating the rhythm. So the bass guitar and the drums create the rhythm in music, and very much, you know, anything to do with dance is orientated between what the bass and drums are doing. And so that was how I started out. I knew very little about it. And it just so happened that when I was 16, I joined a band with The Edge, Bono and Larry. And, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing. We didn't really know how each instrument worked, but we sort of figured it out between ourselves. And I think I was very lucky that the way that The Edge played guitar was it left a lot of room for my style to develop and for me to fill out what would be called the mid-range, within the sort of sonic spectrum. And that was how I, this is what led me to developing an amplifier with Fender guitars and amplifiers. And again, from early on, I'd always felt that, you know, my bass guitar playing was in the guitar range as well. You know, it has that sort of mid-rangey appeal. And you need an amplifier that emphasizes the mid-range. So that was what I did with Fender. And the guys at Fender were really, really helpful. Mm. They worked quite hard with me to get the amp sounding the way I wanted it to sound.
Right.
And so it was a big deal for me to have, you know, a signature amplifier by Fender. I've done a few basses with them over the years. But it's a professional kind of accolade to go that stage. And for me, you know, who I'd never really considered myself a virtuoso, and I you know, it's not something that I aspire to, but it's very nice to be recognized as an influential player. And that sort of is what that did for me.
I still remember the very first time I met you. And I think I was about 12 years old, and that was about the time when I first met you. And it was in London. It was at Earls Court. It was a Zoo Roper show. And it was my very first U2 show. And I came backstage for the very first time. And I met you, and I met Bono, and I met Adam, and I met Larry. And It was wonderful. Like, I was really excited. I didn't really know that much about U2 because I was quite young, but then I got a real introduction to U2 watching the show, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like, I can't believe my cousin's in this band. Like, this is incredible. And I remember meeting your lovely mum, Jo. She was so lovely and really, like, welcoming. She had a lovely chat with me. So I remember lovely Jo. She was a character.
You know, it's nice to be reminded of my mum. She was a great fan over the years and came to lots of concerts. And in fact, all the families were very supportive of us starting out. And my mum and your cousin's mum, Gwenda Evans,
yeah, bless
you know, used to drive us all around the place and, you know, make sure that we had food and money in our pockets and stuff to buy a cup of tea or to get the bus fare or whatever. And I, you know, we probably couldn't have done it without the support of the families. Nice to be reminded of my mum because,
yeah,
you know, she passed away about 12 years ago. Yeah. And, you know, I still obviously still think of her, and I still have that debt of, you know, her encouragement. She bought me my first bass guitar.
Wow. Okay.
Which I had to really twist her arm to do. But she said, if I'm going to do this, you know, you're going to stick at it. You're not going to give up like you have with everything else that you've done. And it fortunately, it was my passion. So I made a go of it, and miraculously it worked out.
Yeah.
I often think that being successful in contemporary music is the odds of you being successful are probably less than the odds of winning the lottery in any given week. So I feel very lucky and very grateful for U2's success. And when we got together amongst the four of us, it normalized us in a way, and we had a common goal, which was to create music that people would gather around. And our attitude was always, it doesn't matter how accomplished you are or how proficient you are, it's the act of desire to do it is more important than anything else.
Yeah.
And so it's wonderful to hear that we've inspired people to, you know, do things on their own bat and to achieve things that they maybe didn't feel empowered to as younger people. And it's one of the, you know, the amazing pleasures of this position is I can meet anywhere around the world other people like yourself that are U2 fans that have said, if it wasn't for hearing your music, I wouldn't have done this or that or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a great relationship to have with your audience, that you pass the baton to them, and it's in some way you give them a key to unlock their own potential. And you know, that's about as great a reward as you can ask for. Yeah. And U2 has been very lucky in that we have aligned ourselves with many charities and causes over the years, and just good people that you know, give of their time and their experience. And one of the other things that we've done, which I'm sure you'd be aware of, is we've set up this thing called Music Generation in Ireland.
Yes, I've heard of that, yeah.
Which allows children sort of in key counties in Ireland. It's not nationwide yet, but we're gradually getting it nationwide. But it just gives children access to music tuition. And so in a way, we're allowing everyone to express themselves through music.
Amazing.
And that's an amazing gift and a great reward to hear young musicians being able to play.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, that leads me on really nicely, because I was going to ask you about your own support for Irish mental health charities. And I know you're a really strong supporter of a mental health charity called Walk in My Shoes. So please, could you tell me why you felt you wanted to get involved with mental health charities? What was behind that? And do you support any other charities?
Yes, I mean, that's there's a few aspects to that question. I I think growing up that I probably had some undiagnosed mental health issues. And it's only now that I look back and, you know, I'm 63 now. And you know, back when I was a teenager or, you know, when I was 10 or 12 years old, people didn't talk about mental health and they didn't really own up to any difficulties. And I wouldn't have been aware of it as difficulties. So, you know, the education around mental health has been a big thing for me. So I think I remember, you know, I had difficulty learning. And whilst I wouldn't have been, you know, it was an ADHD situation, which wasn't talked about or diagnosed. Yeah. But the minute someone started to talk to me about mathematical theories or science or physics, my head just went out the window and I would switch off.
Yeah.
So it's the only thing that sort of brought me back was music.
Yeah.
And so music would calm me and it would fascinate me and it became my passion. Mm. And then in my 20s, whatever, you know, deficiency I had of being able to reason and think, I fell into addiction, primarily alcohol, but also there was some drugs involved as well. And it was only through, you know, digging myself out of that hole that I realized that a lot of the issues of addiction are actually mental health issues. Mm. And so I, you know, I, in as much as part of my recovery from alcohol and drug addiction mm. is to be active in the community mm. and to share the information, I extended that to mental health issues in Ireland. And you know, there was this terrible statistic, and I think it probably still exists, was mm. that Ireland had the leading number of death through taking your own life wow. amongst males under the age of 32. Wow. And it's just disproportionate. And it was really because there wasn't awareness of how to reach those people. Mm. And the other statistic that is really helpful to know is that if you catch mental health issues early enough, mm. people make a full recovery. So it's not a given that you have to go down that path, but you do have to ask for help as early as you realize you're in trouble. And the only way of knowing you're in trouble is through education and people talking about it. So that's how I became involved with Walk in My Shoes, because I think it's a very clear metaphor of how we empathize with each other. And the other person I align myself with in Ireland is Niall Breslin, also known as Bressy.
Yes. And do you know what? Hearing your interview with him gave me the inspiration to interview you. So it was because of him and me hearing your interview with him. Honestly, Adam, I was so touched and moved hearing you speak about what you've been through, and now you've come out the other side. I was just like, actually, that's really brave, because, you know, it's not easy to talk about things that are difficult. And listening to that one with him when you were interviewed, I was like, that is, it really like popped to me afterwards. And I was like, actually, it's really important, as much as they're hard, to talk about those issues. Because it helps other people as well. So I just wanted to say, I thought that podcast was amazing and I listened to it. I've actually been trying to get Niall on my own podcast and I'm still trying. So I hopefully one day he will come on, but yeah.
Yeah, he's a really passionate and dedicated guy. And what he's done in Ireland is, on a very, very small budget, yeah. he has managed to sort of come up with a program that really works in schools for younger people to be able to identify if they're feeling funny about something or uncomfortable about something, that it's okay to ask for help and to put their hand up and say they don't understand what this feeling is. And I think, you know, that's got to be where mental health starts. It's got to start in the schools, and people have to learn, you know, that there is no judgment and that there is a series of assessments that you can do on yourself to make sure that, you know, you are reading the details and the facts correctly, because, you know, quite often we react emotionally to situations that we feel uncomfortable with, and there's a lot of shame involved or whatever. And his program is designed to stop people feeling that they don't have a voice.
Next question I did want to ask is, of course, recently you've all been in Vegas playing in the Sphere. What's that been like?
Well, you know, this was an idea that Bono had about, I'm going to say about 2 years ago. He heard about this thing called the Sphere being built in Las Vegas. And he said, I think we should follow the development of this idea, because I think it's really new. And what it is it's a custom-built venue. It's not primarily for music. I think it's multi-purpose, but it has a sound system in it, so the sound is really good for the band. So the music sounds good. And it has this very, very large screen that is also very high definition. In screen culture, you know, your television screen at home is probably what they call 4K, which would be the best quality of the most expensive television out there. This is a very large screen that is 16K. Wow. So the definition at that scale, because the bigger the image gets, the more it kind of it gets soft at the edges, but because of this 16K resolution, it's sharp. So that was what we kind of went into this building with, and we didn't know how the audience would react to it. We didn't know what the outcome would be, but we commissioned a few sort of, I suppose you'd call them art projects of visuals to work with the music. And the overall effect when we perform in the Sphere is that people are overwhelmed by these images and what emotions, the combination of the imagery and the music in good quality reproduction does. And it's a very emotional experience. I don't think people expected it to be quite so intimate. I mean, it's an 18,000 seater. Wow. So about the size of Earl's Court, but everybody's in a seat. And in the middle, we break it down. We turn off all the technology, and it's really just the band. And the audience get to sing and participate. And I think, you know, when we first started to do it, I think the audience couldn't quite believe that we were turning off the technology and that they then had a role. They were no longer observers, but participants. So it's really been a rebirth for our band in a way, because that was where we started. We started in clubs where there was that sort of intimacy and there was that interaction with the band and participation. And probably with the big shows that we've done over the last 15 or 20 years, you know, it's been more about spectacle and less about participation. Mm-hmm. So it's now come full circle. And we are having a great time. And, you know, we started out, I think we committed to 24 shows. And now we're up to 36.
Yes.
And we may do even more, you know. We're not quite sure.
I was going to ask the killer question. Are there going to be any Europe shows after Vegas?
I think until they they build a sphere in Europe, which doesn't exist at the moment. This is really a show that only works in this kind of environment.
Okay.
Because a lot of the imagery is specifically designed for that. It's a tech thing. It's designed for that screen and that equipment.
Okay.
And to reconfigure that in another situation is hard to do. We're hoping that, you know, the success of the sphere, which, you know, really only opened when we started to do our shows,
yeah,
we're hoping that it leads to more of them being built around the world. And then we can do other shows around the world. Well, we realize that fans all around the world want to see the band again. We've been away since COVID. I think our last concert was 2019 at the Joshua Tree.
That's it.
And that was in Mumbai in India.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit.
Yeah.
And then these are the first shows since COVID. Our intention off the back of these shows would be to go away and do another album. We released a single called Atomic City, which you probably know.
Yes.
Which is, you know, has been very popular with our audience. And we want to put another record together, and then we would tour again.
Okay.
And again, I mean, I think if we go out again, it won't be next year, but probably the year after.
Okay.
I think it'll be a worldwide tour.
Amazing.
And we'll go everywhere that we can.
I was going to ask about a new album. So yeah, what's the news on the new album?
Well, we feel like we've certainly found a new, well, not a new direction, but we're really pleased with how well this song Atomic City has done, which is a little bit of a return for us to those primary colours of rock and roll. So it's sort of up-tempo, it's brash. And we feel that there's been a lot of pop music dominating the airwaves recently. And we wanted to make music that perhaps reflected the harshness of how people are coping with life at the moment. These are difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to make music that is just about ignoring what's going on. We feel like we have to confront it in some way, or at least,
mm-hmm,
refer to it. So we want to make a record that is right in the zeitgeist of what's going on at the moment. And for my own part, I just feel like the world is in a very precarious position at the moment. There are these horrendous wars that are going on, and actually what we really need to unite behind is trying to solve the climate change problem. That's our biggest issue. Not that this is necessarily going to be the themes of another record, but I think it just is, it's the antidote to, you know, pop music that doesn't really address these things. And that's where we want to be.
What is the best thing about being in U2 now?
That I find that when I meet people, instead of, you know, getting to know them over a period of time, over three or four meetings, there is immediately an intimacy. And people feel that they know me and hopefully trust me. So I'm able to have, in a very short space of time, very significant conversations with people where they might say, that they might have had a mental health issue, or they'd tell me something about their lives or a breakup with someone. Mm-hmm. And I feel that's a real privilege, because...
Yeah.
Because it's not often that people will be that unguarded. Most people learn to be a little bit more guarded in what they say to strangers or whatever.
Yeah.
So people share stuff with me, and it just reminds me of the underlying humanity that we all have. And, you know, I have a debt to music, because music unlocks that humanity for me and other people. And I will always do what I can to protect and encourage people to enjoy music.
Well, thank you so, so much. Like, it has, honestly, it's been really lovely to chat and see you, and hopefully I will see you sometime soon, maybe next year, year after, but hopefully we'll see each other, and it'll be really nice to say hi next time I'm in the YouTube camp. So yeah, thank you, Adam.
You have a good day. I will see you at some point at a show in the future.
All right. Cheers, Adam.
Thanks, Kira. Bye.
Bye. Have a nice day.
It was all put together by James Phillips from Is That Friday Feeling, and you can hear our show every single Friday from 3 till 5 only on Surrey Hills Community Radio. So check us out, tell your friends, we'll see you soon!